So we're in the super secret space of the Powerhouse Museum. And if I reveal to where I am,
That's it.
I've got to live here for the rest of my life.
That's right. I'll just show you the sort of things. This is one of our stores. It's one of our highly
secure and also
and
things that
monitored environment.
Yeah.
So it's very stable environmental conditions. The humidity, the temperature, the light levels are monitored carefully here. And we have things in racks, mainly the smaller stuff here. So lots of telegraph equipment. This, by the way, is a telegraph unit from Buckingham Palace, 1851.
But I'm sure Queen Victoria never used it.
To a needle well.
Well, she would have used it.
Probably wouldn't have done it.
No.
And it's possible. I wonder whether Prince Albert might have touched it, because he was
a technical.
Got other people to do it for him, but he was interested. He was, and he was the patron, of course, of the exhibition, the London exhibition, and which was 1851. And I can't help but think at least some of his correspondence messages were done through this machine, and it's beautiful. And the telegraph was one of the sort of wonders of the world at the time, and was on display.
You're communicating with people across the side of the world almost instantaneously.
We've got Morse and Wheatstone type telegraphs, and lots of telephones.
Social networks of the 19th century.
That's right. That one, of course, is the Victorian Internet. The telegraph is the Victorian Internet. We've got early telephone equipment. These are, I think they call them butter pads.
You put one to your ear and
one to your mouth.
Yeah.
That's right. So they're very early and fairly difficult to come by. Then we've got more sort of, these are wall phones. Again,
Bakelite sort of made, yep.
Click, get to the exchange. This one has an automatic exchange on it because you can ring from here for a particular number.
So I can't help but think there would have been telephone geeks back in the turn of the 20th century who knew this stuff back in,
Yep. Absolutely. The geek was always there. Television. And that's where television is fantastic. Early television. There's some serious geeks happening there. And radio, of course.
And back then they would have earned a lot of money relatively as well as engineers in a specialist field.
Some made fortunes, of course, but lots didn't. Lots invented. Like all of these, there are the sort of nerd stories and we all know about the Jobs.
Yeah, you
know,
and the Steves, Gateses of the world.
The Steves and the Gates, but for every Steve, and there are 100 who...
I think I actually learned to type on one of these.
Did you?
That was a joke, by the way. I learned to type on a typewriter, but certainly not one that old. My son's going to have fun with that.
There are lots of... we've got lots of typewriters, and they are spectacular, and not all of them have the keyboards that we're used to. Here's one that's... where you choose your letter and then push down the thing when you've chosen the letter. We try not to move these because we're keeping these forever. And there's another slightly different one where you choose your letter and then hit the punch.
My Apple Newton was like that. It took a long time to use.
You've got a Newton?
In storage. I don't know if you want it or not. You probably got about five.
You've got a Newton, but very important machines. Yes. A bit ahead of their time, I would say.
It's an iPod Touch of the early 90s.
That's right. We've got printing equipment. We've got radios. We've got... I should take you to the good stuff, shouldn't I? And as curator of computing and mathematics, I'm here to tell you that... calculators.
Wow.
From early. This is an arithmometer.
As in arithmetic.
Well, these are French machines that came on the market in the mid 1820s, about the time when Charles Babbage was inventing his difference engine, or building his difference engine, designing and building his first difference engine. This came on as probably the first commercial calculator. The first time they had enough precision in a machine like this to have reproducible
results.
And before that, calculators by, you know, Pascal and Leibniz tended to be, you know, curiosities rather than actual calculating machines.
Things you could use in production day in, day out.
Right. And these remained in production from about that period until about the First World War. So they had nearly 100 years run. So not many machines today stay in production for 100 years without it. Much variation.
Through to sort of more digital types.
Well, these are some early electronic machines. Nixie tube displays. We recently got a machine. I can't remember where it is there. We've got quite a lot of these type of machines. These are Odeners, and they're called pinwheel calculators, and there were lots of varieties of those. A fairly newly famous machine. These ones, which look like a pepper grinder. They're Kurta calculators. They were designed by... we'll have to slot this in somewhere else. I've forgotten his name. Kurta, who was in Buchenwald. They were designed while he was a prisoner in Buchenwald.
Wow.
Yeah. And after the war, he was approached by Liechtenstein to come and set up his company in Liechtenstein. The reason I say they're recently famous is because they're in a story, the most recent novel that I know by William Gibson, where his characters are collectors and traders in old calculators. He even has a character who's making up neural networks using old Sinclair Z80.
Yep. Machines,
machines, and ZX80, those are terrible little plastic things. One of which I acquired when I first got here in 1991. So these are exquisite precision machines, and we've got Kurta 2s. We're still after a Kurta 1 for the collection. I'll tell you his name afterwards. Store it. And then you've got things like this one. This is another late 19th century machine. Pretty primitive. It's a Edmondson's calculator. And this is a Grant's calculator. A billionaire down here. Invented by a fellow called von Steiger. And they're like a souped-up arithmometer. They're beautiful machines, and there must have been quite a few in various government departments.
Oh, well, it was also made in Zurich. So obviously for banking and stuff.
And these, we've got a lot of these, and we've got a lot of millionaires, and I think they must have been. A lot of them come from various government departments in New South Wales and from the universities. So I think these were standard issue for major calculators.
Sort of like sliding rules. People learnt on them, and so therefore they bought them or used them when they were into
sliding
work.
Sliding rules, like we have several of, but most of them are out at another store. But we're getting a new collection of them soon. We're getting a lovely collection of slide rules. This is a slide rule used by a fellow called George Julius, who was one of Australia's most famous engineers, inventor of the automatic totalisator, which is, you know, one of the great Australian computing devices.
For betting.
For betting.
Because Australians are known for betting on anything. A fly walking up a wall. It's the famous phrase.
So they say, those of us from a Presbyterian background were forbidden such things, but but we're not forbidden from being interested in
the work of others. In fact, Presbyterians are probably more interested in how it worked rather than the money. But we're getting into really schisms of the 19th century, which we shouldn't.
That's right. So George Julius was also one of the founding chair people of the CSIR, as well as the Institution of Engineers in Australia. And so we're delighted to have this library. I also have a book of his differential equations upstairs. Not the way downstairs.
We're in a distant secret location.
That's right. So this is just more stuff. Here are some media that you won't see around much anymore. If your email are on discs like this, you're in strife. You'll never get them back again, is my suggestion, my contention.